Hello, welcome to the Medical Maze. I'm your host, Donellen Ray, and today we're going to be talking about an interesting condition called phenylketonuria, or PKU, with our special guest, Dan Elmer. But first, as always, I want to introduce my co-host, Phil.
Hey, I am here. I'm not on camera today, but this is interesting. I've never heard of this this disease before, so we're going to learn something today.
Yes, absolutely. So, Dan, can we say hello to you?
Hi there.
Hello. So, did I butcher the name? I told you I was going to try. So, phenylketonuria.
That's right. Yeah, phenylketonuria.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, then, so what is this? And we call it PKU, right? So, what is PKU?
Okay. So, probably the easiest way to try and describe PKU is it's very similar to diabetes in the fact that the body doesn't produce an enzyme. But in PKU's case, it's an enzyme that breaks down protein and not sugar, as you would have with diabetes. So we're missing that enzyme.
So it's the one, and it doesn't break down protein in your body, you're saying?
That's right, yeah.
So if what are like the symptoms or what happens if this doesn't get broken down?
Okay, so it affects children differently to adults.
Okay.
It's more serious for children, which is why it's important that it gets picked up very quickly after birth.
No, I apologize because I was saying, is it something that they would see or they test for in children?
That's right, yeah. Well, in some countries, they do like a newborn screening. So it's something that's been done here in the UK since, I think, 1969.
Okay.
And it's done in the US and in sort of a few other countries, but there are still quite a lot of countries that don't have any screening at all.
So what would be the symptoms in a child that some parents might see?
Yeah, so it's basically just slow, very slow progress. So you'd expect for a child not to develop as normal. So like being not developing and learning to talk, to walk. Just the general kind of development that you'd expect to see in a young child that doesn't happen. They become very closed off, don't really communicate. So it's something that's obviously pretty obvious fairly quickly.
Wait a second. This sounds like autism.
I guess there may be some similarities. I've never had anyone kind of describe the two together.
Well, Phil has a child that has autism, so he's kind of familiar with some of those, I think, symptoms or signs.
Okay.
It sounds like missing some of those same development milestones might be similar in those sorts of conditions.
I gotta call somebody. I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. So, I mean, isn't that interesting, though? So, and this is all because they're being, you know, who knew you're feeding them, you know, formula and things or whatever that has probably these proteins in it, and then this enzyme can't break it down. So it sounds like then you're saying, so does it affect them? It sounds intellectually, for one thing, it sounds like. What about physically? Did you say, you said something about, is it also walking, did you say?
Yeah, it's it affects all kind of brain development, early brain development.
Mm. Wow. So those countries that don't even they don't test for it, or who knows if they know about it. So I mean, that's a good thing that you're on here talking about this, and that we can maybe help create some awareness here, because that's a serious condition. So it's usually caught. Now, for you, was it caught when you were young as a child?
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate. I was born in 1977, so less than 10 years after testing kind of began. So I'm one of the early early ones with the kind of treatment and stuff. So we're very much kind of the guinea pig generation.
Wow.
For okay. the PKU treatment.
Wow, that's good. I mean, that was fortunate for you. And I know, and Phil, can you pop up the charts here? I know that there's different kinds of PKU, which I find interesting. So there's like this classic case, and it says that's the most severe. This is in the research I was looking at. So, and then there's a moderate or mild, and then there's the mild. Okay, I don't want to butcher this, but hyperphenylalaninemia.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can say that either.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's only missing just a couple letters of the alphabet. But anyway, so what type of these are you?
So I'm classic PKU.
Oh, so maybe the one of the more severe.
Yeah, I mean it's very individual. The what makes it very difficult is that everybody's cases are different severities. So the treatment has to be tailor-made for each person.
Mm. So it's not, is it like a combination of diet and medication, and what do they do to treat that? And like you said, I assume it's different for children as opposed to adults, how they were treated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a child, obviously my experience as being a PKU child is very different to someone who has it now at a younger age, because everything's changed so much. But initially you started on a supplement, which is, it basically has all the proteins and minerals that you need to get from food that you obviously don't get by not having high protein foods. Protein is kind of made up from a whole bunch of different amino acids, and it's only one amino acid that our body can't break down. So we need the rest of it, just minus the one.
So there's nothing like can supplement this. I mean, that would put this amino acid back, right? So there's nothing that like that. It has to, you're just treating around it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I guess. So, I mean, all we can eat is low protein, foods. So we're talking basically fruit, veg, avoiding all high proteins, which is obviously meats, fish, nuts, pulses, dairy produce, and what the supplements that we have to take. In my case, I take one 4 times a day now. That gives me all the minerals and stuff I miss from eating meats and stuff.
Wait, say that again?
The supplements, it gives me all the protein and minerals that I need, minus what I don't need, if you like.
So what happens when you actually eat a lot of protein? You get very, very sick, or like, because I'm taking notes for my son, so I'm like, this may be something that I need to discuss with his doctor, because what you're saying could correlate with him, because we are literally throwing our hands up with a lot of the issues. So that's why I'm so interested in this, because what you said earlier. So what happens when you eat too much protein?
So as an adult, when I eat too much protein now, I suffer with a really bad fatigue. Mm. I can suffer with really bad headaches, depression and anxiety.
Wow.
Probably one of the big ones that you'll hear adults with PKU talking about is extremely poor decision making.
Oh, really? Because intellectual? Well, you know, that's interesting. So if it's treated when you're younger, or just say that it's not noticed until maybe there's been some sort of intellectual delays or whatever. So can those be reversed if you start getting treated?
As a child, no. The damage, once it's done, is done.
Oh, it's gosh. It's not reversible.
As an adult, yes, the symptoms seem to be when you're on diet. I mean, when I'm on diet, I write my blog and I do all the things that I do kind of to advocate for PKU. But if I'm not on my diet, I wouldn't be able to do any of that. I mean, it's just, you know, I'd spend 2 hours writing, you know, a blog down. It wouldn't make sense to anybody. You know, it's hard to put into words that kind of.
So do you start feeling it? So you start feeling it, right? So, I mean, if you have somehow maybe slipped on your diet or something, and then you start feeling it, you know, pretty quickly. Yeah. Does it come on pretty quickly? Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, within an hour of eating a meal.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Usually the first signs would probably be that I'll fall asleep or I'll need to sleep.
Yeah.
And it's like a real crash.
Wow. And depression, anxiety. And since you were treated younger, then hopefully you didn't suffer any of the other more severe symptoms that it sounds like this can have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Wow. Wow. How many people, if you know this, I don't know, how many people do you think have this?
In the UK, I believe there's about 1,000 adults with PKU. I did do some kind of research, but it's only kind of a real rough estimation. I've got some notes here, something written on which I need.
Sure, sure.
Give me 1 second. I used information from the National Library of Medicine. And I worked out from that there's roughly about 337,000 people in the world of PKU.
Mm.
But obviously the amount of people that affects with families and carers and things, that obviously runs into a much, much bigger number of people that are actually affected by it.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Because I can only imagine, especially, you know, just think children, when they're younger, the parents, and they don't know what's going on and their child's sick and they have, you know, the caregiving that comes with that and they just don't know what to do for them. And I forgot, Phil, can you pop up the chart on the symptoms? Because this is some in my research that I found, and I'm sure there's a mixture depending upon how severe your case is. But, you know, if as a kid you're having some of these things, and like one of them is like eczema. Well, kids get eczema, so you probably wouldn't have thought about that, right? Yeah. That,
man, these symptoms, Dominic has, like, my son's name is Dominic Dan, so all of this stuff, literally, like, he got a big head because I got a big head, but hyperactivity, the intellectual delay, the delayed development, the behavior and emotional, the seizure stuff, skin rashes, that he has all of those.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Yeah, this is just, I mean, I'm sure it's not a comprehensive listing. It was just a listing that when I was doing some research, I just saw. And I think I said it, I was Cleveland Clinic and maybe Mayo. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting. And I'm sure, like you were saying, Dan, for you, yours affects you because you're so aware of it now that you probably, as soon as you start seeing your symptom, like the fatigue, the you know, the anxiety or the depression or whatever, as soon as that starts happening, you're like, ah, you know, because you're aware of yours now. So you probably catch it early. Maybe if you didn't, then maybe some of these other ones would really kick in. Or in, as you were saying, in those countries where they don't test for it and maybe don't know, they may have a lot of these things just to different levels of severity. So, wow. That's very interesting. And all because your body is missing an amino acid, right, that breaks down protein.
It's an enzyme that breaks down an amino acid, which is a part of protein.
Okay, sorry, I had that backwards. Yeah, so it's missing the enzyme that breaks down the amino acid related to proteins.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very interesting. I've never heard of it. It's just fascinating that, you know, these kind of unknown conditions and the impact they can have. And like you said, it's not just the patient. it is the whole caregiving system for them, the support system for them, and it affects them.
Yeah.
And the frustration there must be in maybe not getting a diagnosis. And so then you're thinking, oh, well, you know, eczema. Okay, well, then I'll treat eczema. Okay. Hyperactivity, maybe that's ADHD or ADD. So then I, you know, might treat that and then maybe put on medication for that. And then, so then you end up with a whole bunch of maybe medications for all these different symptoms that if you could treat the real issue, if you knew it, you could probably, you know, have a bigger impact on that. So, wow. And then the poor caregivers, I mean, they would at least have an answer instead of trying to track down various symptoms and doctors to treat all those different symptoms and the medications and things like that. So that's very fascinating. This just one enzyme and the impact it can have. So for you then, you're saying that you treat it with supplements. Are there certain kinds of supplements that for that? I mean, are they things that you can get over the counter? Are there things that are prescribed to you?
So that these supplements are prescribed, they're extremely expensive to buy. I think it's not just the supplements that I have to get by prescription. There's a lot of foods kind of in between that still contain protein that is too high for the kind of amount of protein that I can have. So we're talking things like bread, pasta, rice, are all, you know, they're kind of like a medium amount of protein in, but they're still too high for people with PKU. So I actually have to get a special flour, special pasta that all comes via prescription.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So Dan, how does that affect your day-to-day life? Because I mean, when I'm looking at the stuff that you can and can't eat, that's got to be really difficult. So like, how are you when it comes to just like, oh, I have to eat this. This is going to take me 2 hours to make versus you going to go pick something up.
Yeah. Challenging. Very challenging. You know, have to do batch cooking, have to freeze as much stuff as possible. Have to bake my loaves of bread. So it's a lot of forward planning, planning sort of for the week, planning even further ahead, ready for the freezer. So it's, yeah, very, very time consuming, very hard to fit into a kind of normal everyday life.
Do people understand, or do you get a lot of people just saying this disease isn't real? Or because here in America, there's a lot of medical gaslighting by people who are not doctors on the internet. Or your friends. So like how have people do people understand your condition, or are they like, this isn't real?
You know, it's definitely easier now than it was sort of 40 years ago. Because of things like vegans and vegetarians being catered for everywhere, you kind of mix in better back in the kind of 80s when, you know, nobody ate differently. It was it was really pretty bizarre to see someone pulling a, you know, a burger out of a bun and just doing all kinds of random things with the food on the plate before they eat it. I mean, I used to have to, my parents used to have to weigh my food if we ate out.
Oh, wow.
I have to get scales out and weigh everything off the plate.
I was going to ask how is it going out? I mean, it would affect even that, like, kind of socializing, you know, going out to dinner with friends or something. It's easier now, though, you're saying, because of the different types of diets that folks are, you know, prefer and they're utilizing. Is it easier now, or do you still have to take your own stuff? Because I mean, if you're having to get prescription flour or whatever and pasta and stuff, so. I would wonder, do you have to take, if you go out to eat with people, do you have to take your own stuff? Or is there enough available that you can do that?
it's very difficult. I try to go places where I know there's things and alternatives that I can eat.
Yeah.
But usually when I go and eat out, it's very hard not to end up eating chips and salad, which is, you know, my kind of default go-to on a menu, is ordering from the side orders.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Because so you have to avoid anything with proteins. And I think there's a little, we just did a little chart on here, Phil, if you have it, of the things that you have to avoid, you know, they're at the bottom. Milk, eggs, cheese, nuts, fish, meats, beans. The artificial sweetener is interesting. So it's only the one with aspartame? Is that it?
It is. Aspartame is actually made up. It's made up of the amino acid that I can't have, or people with PKU can't have. So it's.
Wow, that's fascinating. I who would have thought? But I mean, when you think about that, that's a lot. And then milk and eggs and stuff are in a lot of things. So can you
eat? Milk, egg, nuts are in everything.
Yeah. I mean, so can you not eat anything with those in them? And even something that's baked or made with milk or eggs.
So we have a way of working out like an allocation of protein for each day. So in my case, I'm allowed 13 grams of protein.
That's it?
Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, my gosh.
So if I was to go to McDonald's and buy a veggie burger, the veggie deluxe, as they've got over here, that I can't have that in a whole day's allowance.
So how do you build any muscle or anything? I mean, I know that in America that people recommend you have like 100 to 200 grams of protein a day. So how do you build any muscle or I'm legitimately confused with 13 grams of protein a day. I just drink a protein shake coming in here.
That's
it. I mean, I'm lucky. 13 grams is pretty good. I know some people are on like 3 or 4.
Wow. You know, so wow.
Some people can't tolerate any at all. I know, you know, that there's some people out there. I've never met anyone who's on, you know, they can't have any.
But sure, probably in most severe cases, that's probably the case. Wow. Mm-hmm. So then that really limits what they can eat or do. I mean, because if you're counting something that's made with milk or has eggs in it or something like that, and you're counting that as, you know, you're over 3 probably real fast. So, wow, that's really.
13 a day.
Yeah, for him. And then you're probably others, like you were saying, are less than that. So can you imagine?
Yeah.
Wow, I feel for you. I feel for you, really. That is, oof.
So I guess then you need to take vitamins and things like that too to try to keep the nutrients in your body and stuff that you might be missing from how you have to eat.
Yeah, this is where the supplements are key to with the diet.
So does it affect you? Like, does it affect your body in other ways because you don't have that protein in your body? Like, are you suffering from other stuff too because of that?
No, I mean, I've got no real kind of, I've never really had any physical issues as far as the PKU goes. It's more been kind of the mental side really that's been a bigger issue for me. But no, physically I've, you know, I used to be a landscape gardener for quite a long time. I've recently stopped doing that, but I was fully capable of doing that sort of thing. It's not been a problem. I know there are, you know, younger generations coming through now who are working out and hitting the gym and they've got, you know, proper training regimes. I think maybe they have access to a higher amount of the supplement to help, I guess, rebuild muscle mass.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting. I mean, just the whole lifestyle change. And you were lucky that you caught it early for you. you know, when you were younger. And so that's, and you were tested for it. So that's great. And then there's medication on top of the supplements that you take for this, that I assume prescription medication that's available, or is it limited to just supplements?
There's the main one they've got is Kuvan, which is available in the US as well. That's been around since, I think, about 2009. We've actually only just got access to that in the UK here.
Oh, really?
I'm actually waiting to go on a trial to see if I respond to it, because the response rate is 30%.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
30%, you said?
Yeah.
Wow. And that's the best that they have of, from a medication standpoint, is one that works 30% of the time for people?
Yeah, wow. Currently at the moment. I know there's Palynziq, which is also available in the US, but it's not available here in the UK as yet.
Oh, really?
I believe that has a higher
success rate or something.
Success rate, yeah.
Tolerance rate, that's yeah.
It. Yeah. Well, to be fair, I don't know a great deal about that, because we don't have access to it here in the UK.
Huh. Can I ask you a question about, because you mentioned earlier in the show that kids are tested at birth. Now, do you know if this is something in the US, or is this just something that they do in the UK?
Yes, it's the Hill-Prick test, which is done, I think it's a couple of days after a baby's born. So it's done in the US, it's done in the UK and a lot of Europe.
Oh, good.
But there's still many places
that
need to catch up.
Okay, because I want to look and see if my son was even tested for that, because...
Yeah.
This is literally the first time I'm hearing about this. So that's very interesting. And if people are watching the show and you know, look it up.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. How can we help? Yeah. Are there organizations that maybe people can refer to? Are there groups maybe, I don't know, that people can donate to, or especially when it's coming about the other countries that don't know about it or test for it? So imagine those children and those parents, and they don't even know that that's a possibility, that it's an enzyme issue. Do you recommend any organizations and groups?
Well, here in the UK, we have the NSPKU, which is the only PKU charity here in the UK. They just celebrated their 50th anniversary last year. And they do a huge amount of work supporting, helping lead the way, really. It was them who managed to bring us Kuvan just recently after, you know, sort of over a 10-year fight of trying to make it available here in the UK.
Okay, and what was the name? Because I want to make sure we include that. What's the name again, if you don't mind?
It's NSPKU.
NSPKU. Yeah, Phil, we probably want to include that, you know, as a reference for folks, if we can. So, yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, Dan, go ahead. I just wanted to make sure I got that down right, so we can include it.
That's right. So I was just going to say, I mean, I know the US have their own charities. There's the ESPKU, which is Europe, based, but there's no kind of one group collaborating over the world, if you like. Everyone's kind of doing their own thing. So being such a small thing, it's everyone's kind of doing their own thing, and really what we could do with getting things on a bigger scale, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I know that you have done a blog yourself of your journey with this. And what's it called?
It's called Truth About Life with PKU.
Truth About Life with PKU.
I'm going to put it on the screen here so you guys can see it here. Here's the website. The
Excellent.
Truth About Life with PKU.com. I mean, .home/.blog. There you go. We'll put this in the comments too, in the description, so you can just click it. But we have the blog here about information on it.
Yeah, let's do whatever we can to try to create some awareness here. I mean, this, like you and like Phil, like you were saying, this just rings so many bells for you.
Yeah, I was just texting my wife. I said, hey, look up PKU.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's wonderful. You've already helped us. So we want to make sure we help others so we can put these other organizations out there. Anything else, Stan, that you think you want our listeners or potential viewers to do or what they can do? We can try to reach out here. They can look at your blog. Anything else that you can think of?
It's just a case of spreading the word. You know, the more people that, you know, talk about PKU, the more it can become known, you know, the better, really. It's just about kind of really raising awareness and spreading awareness throughout the world. You know, there's so many places that aren't, you know, that aren't getting even what we're getting here. You know, I have a friend in Morocco, and he has three daughters with PKU.
Wow.
And they're all untreated.
Untreated. You know? Wow. Really?
Yeah, he has no access to any PKU medications out there.
Oh, no.
Despite knowing that they've got PKU, he's helpless to do anything.
Oh, so that doesn't sound like a very good long-term prognosis for these children. Oh, wow. And well, yeah. I guess they knew enough to somehow they were tested for it to know that they have it. But then that's it.
Yeah.
No treatment. It's like, yeah, you got that. But, you know, have a good day.
Oh, well.
have a nice life.
The health system, you know, around the world, I guess we forget, being lucky living where we live, that you know, there's many countries out there that don't have health systems at all. You know, everyday people don't have access to stuff.
Is there anything that your friend can do where he lives? And I'm sure you guys have talked about it many times, but it's like, do you guys go to conferences maybe and talks about it?
Well, you know, I'm quite new to this. I've been doing the blog for a few years, but this is the first time I've started coming out and talking about it. So I'm kind of finding my feet, but I'm hoping, you know, like I say, I want to raise as much awareness as I can, and I'm trying to push awareness out in his direction as well. So again, it's just talking about it and hoping that, you know, other people get to hear about it, and we can just start creating some new ideas and you know, a lot of it just comes down to money and budgets.
Yes. You know,
my annual prescription bill is about £60,000.
What? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I don't even know what else to say.
Oh my God. That's a salary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to be nosy, but how can you afford that?
Well, we're very fortunate here. We've got the NHS. So, you know, I have to pay a little bit each year towards my prescriptions, but, you know, it equates to nothing compared to 60,000, you know.
Sure, but think about it. For those that don't have health care somehow, you know, insurance of some kind, or wow. Yeah. That's probably a lot of people, because the awareness isn't there, or the doctors don't know, or can you imagine just treating these symptoms one at a time and just all the medications for one at a time for those parents or patients that don't know that they have that? So that adds up. I can only imagine. Wow, though, 60,000 pounds for a prescription. Yep. Wow, that is unreal. Thank goodness, because what if you didn't have any sort of assistance there, you know, on, wow. And or that they didn't know. You're fortunate that you do live in a place that, number one, tests for it, that it recognizes that it's a condition and that you can get some treatment. Wow.
I'm here by really the grace of where I was born. And you know, I just feel now it's my duty really to start speaking for those who don't have that opportunity.
Wow, I think that's great. And I appreciate you joining us for that reason, so we can do what we can to raise awareness. And, you know, and then if there's anything else that we can encourage others to do, by all means, to help create awareness, please, you know, do that. So, well, wow, Dan. So is there anything else that we missed or that you want to add? I want to make sure that we cover everything we can about this to push out this awareness that you're talking about. And you know, it sounds like we're fortunate that we're also in the U.S. and that they test for it here. I have no idea. I don't know anyone that has it, so I have no idea what it's like for the medication. It sounds like we have some medications that you don't, so at least there's access to that. But like you said, I mean, just because we were fortunate to be born in a country that tests for it when you're young, because, I mean, can you imagine, I mean, not finding out till you're an adult after you've already struggled with all these symptoms and you probably have some, you know, irreversible damage, or like your friend. I can't imagine as a parent watching your children decline and not being able to do anything about it.
It's heartbreaking.
It really is. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, and then, you know, what do? Do you try to move somewhere not an easy thing, but you've got to try to move somewhere that has treatment, you know? Wow. It's incredible. It's just incredible. So, yes, I hope that we can get out there. We can do whatever awareness raising, whatever awareness we can on our side. Glad to do it. Encouraging folks to please go check out your blog. There's some links, just some explanation reference links in the charts that we will make available. But it's like to Cleveland Clinic, Mayo, just that they recognize it, you know, and they talk about the condition. I have on here the UK National Health Service, which you said. There are a couple of Facebook groups, one's private, one's public, that maybe folks can go to. Maybe you can, you know, get some support or some ideas or encouragement there. And then reading Dan's blog, talking to people about it. If you, you know, have family, friends in other countries that maybe they have some symptoms, maybe checking to see if they have ever been tested or can be tested. Maybe that's something we can do. Donate to these organizations if you can, if you have the ability to try to raise awareness. Dan, am I missing anything?
No, I think, you know, like I say, just spreading the word, you know, sharing pages, sharing links, just, you know, spread it as far and wide as possible.
Yeah. So, and did we miss anything on your story that really we should cover? It's pertinent to discuss.
Crumbs. I don't know how long we got. I mean, there's a huge amount, obviously, in my blog. And I've still got stories to tell. So there's a whole lot of it. for me, like I say, we're kind of the guinea pig generation and before us. People were released off the diet at different age groups as time went on, before they decided that, you know, the best thing was to stay on the diet for the whole of your life. There's stories of people who came off diet at the age of 8. Some came off the diet at the age of 12 because they thought the brain had finished developing and that there was no longer a risk.
Really?
I personally come off at 16 originally. I was off diet for about 12 years.
Did you have symptoms all those 12 years?
Yeah, but I had no idea it was anything linked to a PKU, so I just thought it was me and kind of tried to bumble my way through. That was a very difficult period of time, but that's all in my blog if people are interested to read that. You know, it's complicated to even know where to start, really, you know, and condense it all down. But coming off of the diet for so long and eating, you know, normal food.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to get back onto that diet has been such a huge challenge.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
And it's been near on impossible to get back onto it the way I was as a young child, just because you're continually comparing, you know,
mm-hmm.
continually comparing foods. The worst thing is getting the taste of foods now that you, you know, technically can't eat for the rest of your life.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's, yeah, I just can't imagine that. And that's a very interesting. So if anyone wants to, please go read Dan's blog and really understand where he's come from with this and his journey with this, because I think it's going to be very insightful going forward, and as an awareness standpoint for ourselves and spreading that word to understand kind of how even one person's journey who is aware of this and who has struggled through various things related to it and how the impact has been on them and their support system. I think it's very, very, very important information. So please go read Dan's blog and read about this condition, and let's spread some awareness as much as we can. Yeah. Well, Dan, I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much. I realize there's so much more to your story that we didn't get to, but I thank you for sharing what you have. And then again, folks, please just spread the word. Spread the word, because you don't want to be like, you know, Dan's friend in Morocco who has 3 children with it and can't get treated and can only watch their condition deteriorate. So, you know, can you, I mean, intellectual disability to just watch that happen because of this enzyme. Exactly. And knowing that it's an enzyme and that there are treatments out there, but maybe you don't have access. So, yeah, let's spread the word and see if maybe that can just change that, you know, circumstance for even your friend. You know, if maybe some awareness is there, and if he can get any sort of access to treatment for his children, you know, it would just be so worth it. So please spread the awareness, like Dan said. And Dan, thank you so much. Appreciate your time and joining us. And we are going to do what we can to try to spread the word ourselves. And Phil's already, you know, texting his wife. So you've already helped us here in the U.S. for sure. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And maybe we can follow up later on and see how things have progressed, seeing if you have been able to, you know, reach out to the other countries and folks there and see kind of how things are going. So maybe we'll reach back out and see how you're doing.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be good. Thank you.
Yay. Well, thank you so much for being on our episode today. And until next time, that's the Medical Maze.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.